your home of sport. Time on with Jack Everett.
On a day where a young Saints prodigy gave a tantalising snapshot into his future potential. Hello and welcome. Great to have your company on Thursday's edition of Time On here on SEN. Coming up in this hour, I'm going to start the show by talking about the NRL scrapping finals until under 13 at junior level. There'll be a lot of parents in the car right now driving home or on public transport on the way home, or you might even, in fact, be driving your young son or daughter to sports training of some sort. I want to talk to you about this, if you agree or disagree with the decision. That's our hot topic, and that's how we start tonight. Later on this hour, Cairns Taipan CEO Mark Beecroft will be with me at the desk here at Melbourne Arena. They have been one of the stories of the summer, the Taipans. From where they were to where they are right now is remarkable. Jeff Kennett had tongues wagging. We'll discuss that a little bit later on. And the CEO of the Meadows, Ash Baker, to join me this hour. Pull my trigger, let me blow your mind. Thursday the 13th of February. My name's Jack Everin, and it's a great day to be alive. Been a beautiful day in Melbourne today, and I'm at Melbourne Arena ahead of United taking on the Cairns Taipans. It is as simple as they must win to keep their season alive, Melbourne United. It's been a season of ups and it's been a season of downs, and they've left themselves in this situation where with two games to go in their season, they must win them both. They play the Taipans tonight and they play the South East Melbourne Phoenix on Sunday in the throwdown, which will be their final game and the final game of NBL 20. Sydney are locked in, Perth are locked in, Cairns are locked in. But it's just that fourth spot now with Melbourne, New Zealand and Brisbane all in contention to qualify for spot number four. You'll hear that game from 7 o'clock tonight. Brendan Joyce will be alongside me, and it is going to be basically a finals type atmosphere and one that we are really looking forward to. I mentioned Max King off the start of the show, a young Saints prodigy. Yes, it's a practice game, and yes, it's just an intra-club hit out between St Kilda's players, but if this first performance is anything to go by, four goals in an intra-club game, didn't kick very straight either. Probably could have had a few more according to the reports coming out of Jen Phelan at afl.com.au. But he was the big talking point to come out of this first game, Max King. Four goals and dominated. Also, according to those who were there today, Ben Long looking really, really good across half-back, and that seems to be a new role for him in 2020. And Dan Hanbury got through a full game as well. So good signs for the Saints, and that is something for them to get very, very excited about, to add King into their forward line for 2020. 1-300-736-736. That's the phone number here on Time On. We always start the show with your calls, or you can send me a text on the Speckle text machine. Speckle cash loans up to $2,000 paid fast on 0433 98 11 16. I want to start tonight by talking about a story that I saw yesterday, and I've just been following along since then. And it kind of grew extra legs when Andrew Bogut became involved on social media. His opinion tends to carry a lot of weight on Twitter. He jumped into this one yesterday, and I want to jump into it with you tonight. It's a story around the NRL, who have made some changes to rugby league at junior level in Queensland. And they're fairly radical changes as well. One of them is that tackling is disallowed until a little bit later on, so later in the junior development program, to try and attract more families to the sport at a younger age. That's one. I don't think that's a huge one in a lot of football leagues around the country. There's no tackling in under 9s and 10s and possibly even higher than that. I know a lot of under 9s and 10s teams around the country now have to wear helmets, and it's compulsory. But this is the one that's really grabbed me. The NRL are planning to remove competitive finals for all children until under 13. So that means that you can play under 7s as it starts there, under 8s, under 9s, 10s, 11s, 12s. It's not until you get to under 13s that you can have a ladder, you can play for premiership points, and you can play for a finals position. Now, I am absolutely dead against this. Completely dead against this. And I want to talk to you about it. 1-300-736-736. To me, this takes away a couple of different things that are so important in development for youngsters. One is memories. Not everyone can win, but if you are in a position where you are able to achieve, and are able to make finals and heaven forbid even win a premiership and whatever your chosen sport is, they are memories that last a lifetime. I can still vividly remember winning my under-10s football premiership. And that's off the back of losing the under-9s Lightning premiership the year before. So for those who say losing is a hard pill to swallow, maybe, but we were better for it. And you learnt how to accept disappointment and move on from it. They're special to me regardless of what age you are. It's not all about winning. And if you've got a coach or you've got a club that put too much of an emphasis on winning at such a young age, well, the problem lies with the club, not with the rules, I reckon. And you need to go and have a look at the culture of your sporting club as opposed to the rules themselves. The other, though, is about learning to succeed as a group, fail as a group, learning to do it all together and that teamwork aspect and to build resilience. And to me, to take away any sort of responsibilities when it comes to that is just premature. Under nines, under tens, no dramas. To me, if you were to play for a Lightning premiership at the end of the year or not even have that, I haven't got a massive problem with that. But to take away the opportunity to have success and to win finals and to play finals in the first place until under 13s, to me is really, really disappointing. That's what Andrew Bogut called it on social media and called it on an interview on Sydney Radio yesterday. He called it disappointing, and I agree with it. And he went on to talk about that there's a beauty in winning and that there's a beauty in losing. What there is also is that there's lessons in both. Life isn't always fair and life isn't always easy. I'm not here to preach, but if we can help educate the youth at a younger age about that and about building resilience, to me it will hold them in good stead for the future. 1300 736 736 to join me on that. You can send me a text on the Speckle text machine on 0433 98 11 16. There will be a lot of you in your car right now or listening at home or on social media who are parents. Or you may not be a parent, but you may have played a lot of junior sport and you feel strongly about this one way or the other. Let's get stuck into your calls. We start with Craig in Montrose. Craig, good evening.
Good evening, mate. Look, I'm going to be a bit long here, so I hope you don't mind. For the last 14 years, what I've been doing for my career is running life skills programs in schools, both primary and high. And one of the things we teach is resilience. And I have, and this is not a word of an exact, and it's not just one school I'm in. I'm in various schools throughout the eastern and southeastern suburbs of Melbourne. One of the alarming things I'm seeing lately in the last 5 years is the drop-off in resilience. Kids just fold like a pack of cards now. And there might be parents out there saying, oh, no, not my boy. Yeah, maybe not your boy or your girl, but the percentage in terms of per head, per kid is growing alarmingly. Because their resilience-building skills get taken away from them all the time. A kid falls off the monkey bars, let's ban the monkey bars. I was at a school last year, Jack, where a couple of kids fell over during the week and skinned their knee playing Tiggy, Chasey. They banned Tiggy. Like, it is just getting to the ridiculous level. Yeah, I'm not joking, mate.
Yep.
It's getting to the ridiculous level. And you just have to probably have a look at who leads the NRL. Okay?
So, Craig, you're pretty qualified with what you do to answer this question. What can competitive sport, and let's take under nines and tens out of the equation here, but from 11s onwards, what are some of the lessons that youngsters, girls and boys, can learn to help build resilience?
Okay, so I think sport is a great metaphor for life for many reasons. And the disappointment and the building, you know, working towards achieving your goals and dealing with the disappointments. And it's like I tell the kids that the groups that I run, I've failed at more things in my life than I've succeeded. That's why I'm successful. You know, and that's the message you've got to send. And I think a lot of these parents are scared to parent. Yes, you don't want to see your kid upset. Yes, you don't want to see your young person, but it's part of life. And if you keep, what I'm seeing now in high schools, Jack, is a lot of kids are withdrawn. They've got no confidence. They don't want to push themselves because they don't understand that, okay, all right, life might be a little bit of a downfall here, but, you know, that's going to spur me on and motivate me in this area. I mean, parents, these lily-livered parents that think this is a good idea, your parenting skills, don't try to enforce your lack of parenting skills and your lack of explaining to your child onto everyone else, because I guarantee the majority of people up in New South Wales, Queensland rugby, will be dead set against the idea. So let's stop catering to the minority of parents who are scared to parent their kids properly. I mean, I could go on for hours. This is something I'm really passionate about. And I see the end result of this every day, Jack. These kids that have got no resilience because people are, you know, they're scared to push them. It's okay. Parent them. Talk them through it. For God's sake.
Craig, I appreciate your call and thanks for not only explaining what you do, but some of the lessons that you're seeing. It's all part of the conversation and appreciate it. 1-300-736-736. Ange is in Maribyrnong. Good evening, Ange.
G'day, Jack. How you go?
Good.
Look, I totally disagree with what you're talking about, Jack, to be honest.
Yep.
The kids today, we've got a lot of deficiency in our game. Simply because we don't teach. We haven't got the time. We don't put in the time and effort into the kids. We need to teach them. We need to nurture them. Okay? It's not about winning flags. Okay? You know how you said about, those memories. Mate, look, I've taken plenty. And if you ask me, was that a memory for me? I say no. Okay? The ones that are really important for me are my senior years. Okay? Where I want to play senior football. Okay, where I've got nurtured to play a certain way, okay, and then I can go and really compete. But when you're doing the kids, okay, and a lot of clubs, they just go out, you know, and they're recruiting all the big balls, especially in the NRL. You know,
yeah.
You can imagine, you know, all these clubs want the big kids, they want to just steamroll the little ones. That's no good. You know, the guy what he was talking about, resilience, he's got no idea.
Well, Ange, appreciate your call. Thank you. We've got to keep moving. 1-300-736-736. Craig, our previous caller, does do it for a job, so I'm sort of happy to take his feedback on it. I will say one thing, and I'm glad that you brought this up, and I appreciate your opinion. I'm glad that you brought up about clubs recruiting kids and not understanding what it's all about. That's the club's issue. And there are clubs everywhere like this. So I can think to junior footy that, you know, there were some that were like that completely didn't get it. And rep basketball's a shocker for this. Even cricket. I've been involved at local cricket for a very, very long time, and I see it there as well. The issue there lies, and that is how the experience does get ruined when it goes too far the other way. But that's the club and the culture and their organisations. That's not, in my opinion, the rule itself. But, Ange, when it comes to ugly parents and ugly clubs, that I am on board with you. Christian's in Frankston. Hey, Christian.
Hey, Jack. How are you, mate?
Good.
Yeah, just wanted to comment on, you know, the no premiership points and no ladder and all that sort of thing. And I've coached junior footy and did it for a while. And my son played. And I think it actually promotes mediocrity. The kids know the score of the game, so you know, win, lose or draw, they know the score, even though you're not scoring and there's no ladder. But it just doesn't give them that sense of urgency to really want to win the game. Now, you play for points and play finals. It's an achievement to get to the finals and then win the premiership is another achievement altogether. But I don't think it gives them, you know, the desperation or the drive to try and win week in, week out. So if they do get a little bit behind and they do, you know, struggle, they're happy just to get a kick.
Yeah, you know, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Christian, thank you. I think to your point, and unless every parent will teach different lessons and place important on different things. I'm not here to tell you how to parent. That's your right and I'm not here to preach. But I can think back to certainly something that my mum and dad spoke about a lot when I was young, and that is not for sport, this is for life in general. That if you work hard and you dedicate yourself to something, then results will come off the back of it. And to me, that's something else. That if you say to a team at the start of the year, if you work hard and you do what you need to do, then you will achieve results. You may not win the premiership, but you may win games and you will win more games and you'll get to experience that. So there's that reward at the end of it as well. Off the speckle text, 1-300-736-736 to join me on the phone as well. Andy from Gisborne says, 1,000% right. We're raising a generation of kids with no resilience whatsoever, who end up on the workforce and unfortunately don't know how to handle pressure or negativity. Sharpie says, you'll find the removal of scoring ladders, finals, etc., is the product out of control. Sorry, is the product of out-of-control parents and coaches. We are not protecting kids from hurt feelings, from losing. We are protecting them from poorly behaved adults who can't cope with their kids losing. Yeah, that's a subject for another night, but ugly parents and that type of behaviour, that's just about one of my biggest pet hates in life, let alone in sport. This one, I'm a child psychiatrist. 2 points. Is this rule in response to parents being arses? Quote unquote. And 2, I agree, finals, assuming managed okay, are good for 13-year-olds. Somewhere between 5 and 9, finals and emphasis on winning should not be a priority. That I agree with as well. Brad's in Botanic Ridge, wants to have a chat about this one. Hello, Brad.
G'day, Jack. 2 points here. I'm a junior coach of basketball, and my basketball team also plays football. But for the last 3 years, they've been scoring in basketball. Yep. But they don't score in football. And they also, half a dozen of them play cricket, and they score in cricket, but they don't score in football. So it really defeats the purpose when one coach doesn't want to score and wants to protect everyone, but from under-8s in basketball, they've been scoring, because scoring's important to benchmark each team. And what you find in footy, when they don't score, is that the games are so lopsided because you've got one team who should be in A grade or the top division, because they can score 20 goals in a game against a side who won't be able to move the ball from one end of the ground to the other, who, if they scored, would be in B or C grade and be playing against like-minded or like-talented groups, which then promotes participation. But without a score, the kids know, the caller said before, the kids know how many goals and points they have kicked and how many touches they've had, because they're used to it in other sports they play. The second point that I want to make is that if we talk about participation and enjoyment, that's very different to playing under-9s and under-10s, because sure, that's what Auskick's for. That's what Milo Cricket's for. That's what all the other hot shots at tennis. That's where your kids get taught how to play the game, to fall in love with the game, when they've got time to experience all these things. When sporting stars come down to clinics, they don't come down to junior footy clubs. They come down to Auskick centres. But I don't know about you, Jack, but when I was young, I went to Auskick until I was, or it was Vic Kick back then, but
yeah,
until
it was,
I was
for
in
me
grade
too.
5
yeah.
or 6.
Yep.
But now, yeah, it's kind of like, good luck finding an Auskick centre that would go past grade 2, because everyone wants to go straight into under 9. So we've got to be mindful that we're trying to, I don't know what the jurisdictions are saying is their rationale for not scoring, but it's very misguided, in my opinion, that it's not actually, that where you play at Clubland, that's, you've gone past that development, kind of learning and enjoyment of the game, so that you can't ruin it with scoring. I just think that we've missed the point there.
Yeah, Brad, thanks for your call, and some points well made. And yeah, I think part of this too, I've been involved in at cricket local level for a very long time, and I always kind of felt that seeing reward for effort, as I spoke about earlier, and seeing the hard work pay off for something encourages more, encourages you to continue to work hard. There's a result at the end, and I think for a lot of young kids, not for all young kids, but for a lot of kids, that helps their development in a big way. Jason's in Williamstown. Good evening to you, Jason.
How are you, sir?
Good, thanks.
I'm involved in local footy and in local basketball, and one thing I can tell you with local footy is every single kid on the ground knows who won. Yeah. Every single boy that comes off knows how many, to the point. They all know how many goals they've kicked. They all know how many points they've kicked. And you cover that into basketball. I've been playing, coaching basketball now since my son was in under 8, and they've scored every game. And if they win, they're great. If they lose, they're great as well. It doesn't really affect them 5 minutes after the game. And a few of the previous callers have also said that, it does take some bit of resilience. I know that our team loses and they get upset when they've lost, but 5 minutes after you give them an ice cream and a cuddle, they're all good to go again. It's not the end of the world.
No, and I think part of that too, and you sound like you see the world the right way, Jason, so thanks for calling. I think part of that too, it does come back to, I've spoken a lot this hour about the culture that sporting clubs and sporting teams create, and that is the duty of each and every one of them. That is something that they need to own, and they need to make sure that they're creating the best environment possible. And part of that is that if you lose, you can explain and you can discuss why. Jason, thanks for your call. We'll get back to this a little bit later on this hour. Nathan and George, we'll get to you a little later on this hour as well, talking about Max King and talking about the Saints, because I know There's a lot of very excited St Kilda fans right now. You're with Jack Heron on Time On here on SEN.
On SEN, your home of sport. Time On with Jack Heron.
23 after 6 here on Time On. I'll get back to your calls very shortly. 1300 736 736 to join me. We're talking about no finals in junior sport. It's been a fascinating debate so far. I'd love to talk to more of you very, very soon. We are here, of course, at Melbourne Arena ahead of Melbourne United taking on the Cairns Taipans. That game starting at 7.30 tonight, and our coverage with Brendan Joyce joining me in commentary starting at 7 o'clock this evening. You can also shoot your thoughts here on the Speckle text machine. Speckle cash loans up to $2,000 paid fast. 0433 98 11 16. The Meadows are doing some outstanding things. They connect with the community like no other, and they have got a very, very special weekend coming up, and the first night of the TAB Australian Cup. The CEO of the Meadows, Ashley Baker, has been good enough to join me here on SEN. Ashley, good evening.
Good evening, Jack. Thanks for having me.
Hey, this is a really big couple of weeks that you've got coming off, and this weekend starting in itself is going to start with a big bang.
Yeah, we've got the Australian Cup Carnival kicks off on Saturday night with our kids' night, which is obviously a big night for our families, free entertainment. We've got Wild Action Zoo there for the children, and we've got 300 show bags to give away along with a number of other activities. But on the track, we've got three Group 1 races headlined by the $100,000 to the winner, Tem Lee.
Yeah, and the Tem Lee, Baruga Brett is back, which I think is fantastic, and brings some decent form. I would imagine he's going to be right up there with the betting.
Yeah, look, he's a meadow specialist, this greyhound. Yeah. He won two Group 1s this time last year, and his last couple of runs have been... Look, his best is probably 6 to 12 months ago, but given his form on the track, he's certainly a leading chance. But when you've got greyhounds like Simon Told Helen, who heads the Australian Cup markets for the final in a couple of weeks' time, he's certainly going to be at his best to beat a greyhound like him.
Tornado Tears, one of my absolute favourite dogs. Robbie Britton's just done such an outstanding job and been such a successful dog. In action on Saturday as well at the Zoom Top title?
Yeah, so the Zoom Top for the Stayers, another one of our Group 1 races, that's $75,000 to the winner. Tornado Tears returns from a trip to Perth after a below-par effort over there, but he's drawn box one, which he loves to get onto the rail since he's got a bit older, and if he steps away cleanly, he's certainly going to be the greyhound to beat, but he's also up against his younger brother, Here's Tears, who yeah. is a lightly raced greyhound coming off a track record breaking win at Sandown a couple of weeks ago. So really intriguing race, that one.
One dog that I think is worth, if you're thinking about going along and checking it all out, there's one dog in particular that I would advise just to go and watch run. Simon Told Helen is becoming an absolute megastar in greyhound racing. Exciting to just watch the progress of this dog, because every time it seems to run, it gets better and better and better.
Yeah, look, he's. I think he's only had something like 16 starts, but he's already been to Brisbane and back and won the Derby up there. He's a Group 1 winner at the Meadows. Like I said earlier, he's a favourite for the Australian Cup, and he's a good chance of winning on Saturday night. He's favourite. He could collect $100,000 there, and then he could return in 2 weeks' time and win $300,000 for the Australian Cup. So a dog like him has got such blistering early speed. He always puts himself into the race. So Saturday night will be an interesting one because he's up against some very, very good greyhounds.
Oh, he sure is. I'm just having a look at the field right now. So just for those who don't see a lot of greyhound racing, Ashley, just tell us about the Australian Cup and in particular the prestige that this event brings and where it sits in the calendar of the big races across a year.
Yeah, look, it's our feature race, and it's steeped in history. It dates back to the 1950s. We just upped the prize money, the club that is, the Melbourne Greyhound Racing yeah. Association. We just lifted the prize money to $300,000 to the winner, which only puts it behind the Melbourne Cup, which the other metropolitan club in Melbourne, Sandown, run, and obviously the $1 million chase in Sydney, which is the new novelty race that's been introduced for the last couple of years. But this is one of the oldest Group 1 classics on the calendar across Australia, and it's been won by some great greyhounds along the way. But it's not an easy one to win. This weekend's the invitational races, so these three Group 1s are selected by a panel. Next week, they've got to return and run in the heats to qualify for the final. So there's a little bit of work to do to get there on the feature event on the 29th.
And just having a look at those fields too, there's a couple of good dogs in the reserves for each race as well that have missed out. Have you got a little prediction for us as we let you go, Ash, on Saturday night? Is there one that you think we should be having a look at?
Look, I'm a big fan of Whiskey Ride in the Tembley. He's a Melbourne Cup winner. He's just such a strong greyhound. Anthony has a party. He's an animated character, a great conditioner of his dogs. And I'd love to see him win and knock off the favourite. But I think it'll be between him and Simon Told-Helen, because they've both drawn reasonably well to suit their pattern of racing. And look, I'm a Tornado Tears fan, mate, so I'd love to see him jump from the red and just chase and keep running and be too strong for a couple of these younger dogs going around against him.
Yeah, I think we all love Tornado Tears. It's been such a fantastic story. Hopefully he's got a couple more wins left before it's all said and done. Ash, thanks for joining us and good luck Saturday night. Should be a ripper.
Thanks for having me, mate. Cheers.
Ashley Baker, the CEO of The Meadows, joining us here on Time On. And you can join me, 1300 736 736. Just before the break, Mark Beecroft, the CEO of the Cairns Taipans, to join me on the other side of this. Lou's in East Malvern has been waiting patiently. G'day, Lou.
G'day, Jack. Hope you're well, mate.
I'm good, thank you.
Look, I was involved in junior football and also all the way to Colts and some under-19s in the amateurs. The first thing kids at a very young age, no matter what sport, no matter what gender, they've got to learn or they've got to enjoy their sport. They've got to enjoy their participation in the game, whatever game they play. But don't kid yourself. As the kids get older, you know, 8, 9, 10, part of that enjoyment's winning. As long as, you know, they know that winning isn't the be-all and end-all at a very early age, it's up to, you know, the coaches, the parents, the club, to give an environment of enjoyment for all the kids. But as they get older, they want to win. They just want to win on their own, off their own back. And don't kid yourself. Kids come off the ground. They even count their stats. They tell you how many kicks they've had, how many hard ball kicks. They keep score. They know if they've won or lost. As long as they enjoy it with their mates, you know, and as they get older, they want to win. They want to play finals because it's part of the enjoyment, you know.
Yeah.
They've got to enjoy the game. As long as they enjoy themselves, And you know, if winning is part of that enjoyment for some of the kids or for most of the kids, great. But you can't individualise in a team sport. Lou, you've got to coach them as a whole.
Lou, I appreciate your thoughts and thanks for hanging on too. I'm glad you did. Some points really well made. And a lot of texts coming through off the Speckle text machine. I'll get back to them a little later on this hour saying that maybe these rules are for the parents and not for the kids. If that's the case, then that's a far bigger problem that we're dealing with. You're with Time On SEN, the CEO of the Cairns Taipans will join me at the desk next.
On SEN, your home of sport, it's Time On with Jack Heverin.
25 to 7 on Time On from 7 o'clock tonight. It is United Live. Brendan Joyce will join me at the desk as United play to keep their season alive when they take on the Cairns Taipans, who they don't have to worry about keeping their season alive, the Taipans, because they are locked for the NBL 20 finals. They've been one of the stories of the summer, and their CEO, Mark Beecroft, has been good enough to come by the desk here on United Live and have a chat. Mark, thanks for being with us, and congratulations on, so far, what's been an amazing season.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a big difference in 12 months. We actually played in this game this time last year. Yep. It was the second last game of the season, and we beat Melbourne United, who were on their way to the playoffs, and we were on the way to the Wooden Spoon.
Yeah, I remember it well, actually. Hey, tell me what you're thinking. I know a lot's been made of last season. What were you thinking at 0-3 at the start this year? It was a very different looking roster. Were you starting to think, oh no, here we go again, or was the faith always there?
I think the faith has been there. Our build was happening towards the back end of last year. I think the good thing about Mike Kelly, you really find out after 14 straight losses, the character of people, and we knew Mike's positivity through that period would come through. Obviously, the recruiting strategy in the off-season, him having a better understanding of exactly what he wanted, and more time to prepare for that off-season. That 0-3 for us, if you look at those games, game one against Sydney, we only just lost.
Yeah.
It was about learning from there how to win. There was a game against Brisbane that we lost without DJ Newbill, who was waiting for an injection that didn't happen. We were close again in that game. And I think, you know, we didn't know just how well the connection of the group would happen following that. But we thought we had the right pieces and it was going to take some time to come together. 0-3 with some close losses and without DJ in one of those games, I thought we get everything together and everyone playing well, that things would certainly move.
And they have. That's the $64,000 question, is how do you get a team to connect? To be honest, Melbourne United have had their troubles all year with a new team and connecting. Has there been any secrets that you're willing to share with us about how Mike and you and the group have been able to connect as one this year?
Yeah, lots of secrets, and I'm not going to share any of them.
I was worried you'd say that. I thought I'll ask the question anyway. Yeah, I wasn't sure where it went.
Yeah.
Mike Kelly himself is well known to a lot of our listeners who would have grown up like I did, watching Mike play for the Magic and see him become one of the toughest defenders the league's ever seen. We've seen him evolve from a great assistant coach into now what I think is going to be a really long-term senior coach who gets the job done in this league. How have you seen his growth in two seasons?
Yeah, I think you've got it right. I think, as I said earlier, the character in that period last year, we knew that coming in, we were late to the table around when we made the change. So a lot of the good players in free agency had already gone.
Yep.
We 8 new players last year. In fact, 8 new players this year. Mm. So we know it takes time. But really, I think his mindset around having a clearer picture of the style that he wanted to play, and I think that came through last year. We didn't quite get the pieces right. We didn't get the pieces right around our import balance, and that was certainly a strategy for the off-season.
So the strategy was to play a more high-tempo game?
He really wanted long. We got that, and that was a key signing with Majuk. He was sort of first off outside of the three that we returned. And then obviously the big piece for us was Quatnoy. That gave us flexibility with the other pieces of our import mix. So those two players with length, with athleticism, were a key part of how we put it together.
Is there a bit of a duty when you're a team that isn't in a metropolitan capital, like you are, to play an attractive brand of basketball? Do you feel that pressure at all, or is that something that us who live in Melbourne and Sydney think that the smaller market teams actually have to do?
Well, I think our style under Aaron Fearn was very different. It was an exciting style of basketball, but he had good success. We had good, good recruitment, but it wasn't an exciting style. It was come down, move the ball, go through process, which is different from what Mike has wanted. And that took time. Obviously, that's a big learning from Mike year one to year two.
Competing against the bigger teams, just what is that like on a day-to-day, week-to-week, round-by-round basis? I would imagine you have to be a bit nimble and a little bit smarter at times.
Well, we think we are. I don't know if we always pull it off. But certainly, both on and off the court, we've had to be strategic. We try to stay nimble. We've got a wonderful board. In terms of governance and what happens off the court, we've got a small admin team that are multi-hatted. So resource-wise off the court, we try and stay as dynamic as we can and try and keep up. It doesn't always work. But on the court, if you use this weekend as an example, there'll be 5 teams that are now focused on next season. We've been one of those teams for the last few years. We need to stay in front of that conversation while at the same time being completely locked into what's in front of us right now.
So with such a small admin team, I'd imagine there's a lot of extra planning that's got to go on for a final series now. What's this week been like for you?
Manic, yeah. And I'm down here.
Yeah, you are.
So my team back in Cairns.
Keep working.
You better still be at the office. They do an incredible job. And we're lucky in some respects with that team, but we also are our own ticketing agent, so the control of all that information and data has worked really well for us. They work hard.
Oh, I can see a little smile. I know you don't want to smile fully yet, but I can sense the excitement for what's to come when the finals start, because they're hard to make.
They've been hard for us to make, and we've had success over the years. This is my 11th year, and going back to the playoffs, it's exciting for a small regional team, 150 to 170,000 people spread across a very big footprint that is Cairns. And so to do that really in the size of a suburb of Melbourne is quite special, and the town is galvanised around the team, and that becomes exciting for the club, for everyone involved.
Scott Machado, talk to us about what you saw in Scott Machado and what Mike and the rest of your front office wanted. He came with a great resume. It's almost amazing to think that he hasn't been in this league before. What was it about him, though, that you really attracted you to him?
I'll probably go back a step, because when we went into Summer League, we had samples or examples of players that Mike really liked. And Cam Oliver was the prototype.
I can understand that, yeah.
Who he wanted in that 4-5 position, with flexibility to either go big or small and stretch the floor. And in terms of point guards, Mallow was a wonderful player for us last year, and we would have loved to have been able to return him. But we knew that DJ Newbill was a key piece in coming back to us in what he'd showed us last year. And we felt that we needed, in order to get the best out of DJ, someone that was prepared to pass first.
Yep.
And so the example we were using in the point guard position was Scott Machado. And we had these two samples about prototype, wish list. It would be a Cam Oliver type. It'd be a Scott Machado type. And then we had the opportunity to actually sit down with Cam Oliver and in Vegas with Mike Kelly, and that connection really happened, and it was strong, and we were fortunate enough to be able to bring him to us. And then we said, well, if we got that as an example, why don't we
get the other example,
and see if we can get, and everything fell in place in order for us to be able to get that. And it was about having the mix of players and someone that was prepared to really have their teammates first, and that's what we've been able to see, and what I think has been exciting for everyone to watch with Scott.
The obvious question, can you keep him?
We're doing our best, as we always will.
Cam Oliver's an interesting one. I'd heard a little bit about him coming into the league, and you had Mallow last year, as you say, as a younger import, and Mallow's had his criticisms this year at Melbourne United. He's still 24 years old. Cam's still in that younger bracket of mid-20s. How challenging is that for imports to come over with all that expectation, in both of their cases, barely out of college?
Well, I think for Cam, it was the important piece for Cam was around his family. He's young, and he's got a wife and two young babies. And when he sat with Mike in Summer League, they had very similar backstories. Mike Kelly, when he came to Australia, young player,
yep,
wife and babies. And I think that really galvanised the connection for them, and I think that's enabled us to really build some things around Cam and his family that he's comfortable, his wife and kids are comfortable. It's an easy place to do it in Cairns, and so that part for him was important. And in point guards, it's been a little bit of with Scott difference from where we've been. If you look at the point guards we've had over the years, we've had great point guards.
Yeah, you have.
Mallow included, but if you go back to the Scotty Wilbekin times, he was straight out of college, and that's sort of been where we've been at. And again, we wanted some more experience, more leadership, more, I guess, rounded. And again, that was why Scott at 28, 29 was so appealing.
You've got two games to get through this weekend, and then the business starts, and they're two big games for you as well. To jump right ahead, what would it mean for, not just for you personally, but for the Cairns community, if you were to win NBL 20, what would it mean?
Oh, it'd be incredible. Yeah, there's been a lot of people over a lot of years that have contributed and continue to contribute to this club. And I think that the town really is poised around the playoffs. When we go on sale, that game will sell out very quickly.
Yes, it will.
It's magnificent. It's an exciting time, and you see orange all through the city, through businesses, homes. So, you know, that becomes a special time for the team, and they've certainly earned it this year.
And it's on the back of some of the work that you and your crew have done as well to get this roster together and get the club all functioning as one. Mark, good luck tonight, and good luck for the finals. There's a small part of a lot of people that are rooting for Cairns in the finals, so good luck.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Mark Beecroft joining us on Time On here on SEN. We'll come back and wrap up some of the other stuff that you've missed from across the day.
On SEN, your home of sport. It's Time On with Jack Everon.
We're out and about tonight at Time On. We are at Melbourne Arena as Melbourne take on the Cairns Taipans in an elimination final. United lose and their chances of playing finals is over. We're going to boot that broadcast up in about 10 minutes from now. Brendan Joyce to join me. He is very sharply dressed. He's got all of his notes. He's setting the tone for us this evening. It's George is in Northcote and has been waiting patiently to talk about his beloved Saints. Hello, George.
G'day, Jack. Nice to speak to you again in season 2020. Look, for me, as a Saints supporter, you know, it's the new thing. It's the arrival of Max King playing his first year, being fully fit. Hannah's getting through a whole game. Menlong tried across half-back, and he's been improving week in, week out. Dan Butler bobbing up with a couple of goals. So it's the Saints having a new look that presents the excitement rather than having year on year, where's the improvement going to come from? So I think it's something that a lot of Saints supporters will be really looking forward to.
George, I'm sure that I'm going to talk to you before round one, but if I had to ask you right now what your expectations are for next year as a Saints fan, what are you thinking?
Look, we should be knocking on with the changes and the list management and the coaching staff and the number of years that some of the youngsters have been there, like Billings and Dunstan, 5 or 6 years. It has to be a year this year more than ever that we knock on the door of the finals. Because, I mean, I know there's a lot of competition from other clubs like Melbourne and Port Adelaide, but I think this year we've invested so much and there's such an expectation that this year would be a real disappointment if we missed out again.
I appreciate your call, George. Always nice to talk to you, and we'll do it again across the season. As we finish up today, a couple of other things that you may have missed that I want to catch you up on before I finish. Jamie Cripps has extended his contract with the West Coast Eagles until 2023. He's been a very good player for that club for a long time. John Worsfold told AFL.com.au that if Joe Danaher isn't at Essendon next year, it isn't the end of the world. Maybe, maybe not. Buddy Franklin spoke today about his injuries and the frustration with the last 3 years of injuries. We heard Josh Kennedy earlier in the week say, don't rule Buddy Franklin out of round one yet. The longer this goes, the more chance he is of missing round one. But if anyone's going to get themselves up, he is a competitor, Buddy Franklin, and I think he might be a chance as well. And Paul Marsh spoke today with Gary and Tim and not reports of the AFL men's players having to subsidise the AFL women's players today. He knocked them on the head, said that those reports were completely false. All of the podcasts from all of the best stuff right across the day is up now at sen.com.au. And thanks to everyone for your Speckle text. Speckle cash loans up to $2,000 paid fast.